Lynn's first birthday, Friday, June 21st. A full year, one of the happiest in our personal lives, and one of the most tumultuous and often painful in the public life. I woke up rather early and went in and had breakfast with Lyndon about 8:30, did a little work on my desk, trying to organize my day. The return from a trip always staggers me. So high is the desk piled. Ashton needs to see me. Bess and I must get to work on the social side of the house. And Liz has to have some decisions. A little after 10, I went to the pool for 30 quick laps. And then, back upstairs, got dressed for Lynn's birthday, putting on my wet hair. Unaccustomed fall, which looked frankly what it was. Took a brief stop first with Cynthia to Lyndon's Council on Recreation and Natural Beauty. This is a joint one with all the government members, headed by Hubert, and the public members. Lawrence Rockefeller is the top one. Hubert was presiding. I slipped in as quietly as possible, listened to a couple of the reports, most of them unhappily read, but not Hubert, who has the facility of injecting life and the necessity for action into everything, and considerable humor, too. I sat next to Lawrence. He gave me a parcel of the reports of the committee. The electric power industry seems to be making considerable strides in burying some lines, in screening some facilities. I stayed just about 30 minutes and then rode home with Cynthia and Sharon, had a hamburger on a tray in my room while I read more mail and signed. And then, a little past one, went down with Lucy and Lynn to the Rose Garden for what Lucy had laughingly called his press conference. And there were an amazing number of cameras and some writing press lined up in the Rose Garden. Lyndon came out of the cabinet room. There was a little tiny table and a little tiny chair, and a modest-sized white cake trimmed with red roses and one blue candle and lots of American flags for a little boy in a red, white, and blue jumper. Around his neck, there hung a ridiculous note, his White House pass, his picture, and the information that cleared him to come and go from the White House. We did not tell the press that the pass had been accompanied by a letter from J. Edgar Hoover himself, saying that nothing derogatory was found in the files of the so-and-so-and-so against Patrick Lyndon Nugent. Lucy, who is never at a loss with the press, had plenty to say in answer to their questions, but Lynn had practically nothing. In fact, our gay, laughing, funny little boy was silent, even solemn, I think because he had slept so late. He has the most ridiculous hours. He doesn't wake up before about 10, and sometimes it's 12 or later. It just so happens that's the way Lucy likes to live, too. If Lynn was noncommittal and I was just an onlooker, both his grandfather and his mother made up for it. He has 12 teeth, Lucy said, and he speaks about 6 words, mama, dada, bye-bye, more, won't, and he wears a size toddler 3. Lyndon said, you got a platform, anything you want to tell them? And then he says no comment. And then Lyndon took out of his tiny pocket knife and cut a big chunk of cake for Patrick, but he preferred a red rose off of the top and tried to take a bite out of the candle. Lucy looked adorable, all peaches and cream in a pink dress, her black hair shining, and so proud of little Lynn. I slipped in early because I wanted to have just a few minutes with Andre Meyer, who was waiting to have lunch with Lyndon. I hugged him. He seemed really pleased to see me. He'd been to Europe since our visit to the ranch. I stayed just a moment and then left for Mr. Pears. Zephyr sent me a hamburger and Coke, and I ate under the dryer with my straw bag of mail, that Siamese twin of mine, for work. I was back at the White House just in time to dress and go down into the Jacqueline Kennedy Garden for a reception on the delegates to the Conference on the Status of Women. Esther Peterson met me at the door and took me by the hand, introducing me to everybody as we filed through the walks of the garden. There were a few faithful cabinet wives, Barney Clifford, who surprises and pleases me by working at this job, and Jane Freeman, who I think comes most often and works most earnestly, make our varied groups feel at home and a part of everything. And I think I saw Georgia Clark. Most of the delegates were professional women, club women, social workers, a large delegation from Hawaii, also from Alaska, a sizable sprinkling of Negro women. The Cliff Alexanders were there, Mary Kisling, Mary Lord, Katie Lockheim, who had just written me a wonderful, sweet letter, a sort of a valedictory. Both the John Macy's, Marguerite Raywald, Ellen Winston, Frank Wozencraft. I circled the garden with Esther introducing me to everyone. The weather was very hot, and we had wilted sandwiches and limp cookies, and I felt remiss in having it in the garden, although usually this is my favorite place. I spent about 40 busy minutes, and then was back upstairs for the main event of the day, Lynn's real birthday party, which took place a little past 5 in the yellow oval room, with an extraordinary guest list. A Catholic priest, Father Kaifa, a Jewish doctor and his wife, the Kraskins, a family, Mr. and Mrs. Lindo and Helene, with every one of whom Lucy has the same degree of compatibility, no generation gap in her life. Our twice bridesmaid, good friend all four of us, Warren Lynn, and from the staff, Ashton and Willie Day, and to my surprise and pleasure, Simone, who had handled the press when baby was born, and whom Lucy included with the delightful remark, "Simone just might as well have had him." I'm sure the yellow oval room has seldom been the stage for such a party. A black and yellow striped tiger, 5 feet tall, standing by the mantel was the first thing I saw, and then a great pile of packages, and Lynn sitting on the floor by them with all the guests ringed around him in chairs. His mother came in bringing a cake she herself had made, chocolate all the way through, and when she put it down in front of him, I ran for a sheet, finding instead large towels, and put them underneath the cake, out of respect for the White House furnishings. Patrick Lyndon eyed the cake for a few moments, and then he raised one foot and brought it down, ka-plop, right in the middle of the cake, just like the tar baby, while we all fell out with laughter. His poise was in no way shaken, and he kept on taking a lot of interest in us and in the gifts and everything, while his foot stayed right there. His favorite among the gifts, I think, were the suckers and the wrappings on the rubber canoe, Beat Big Indian Lynn, it said, that Warren Lynn had given him. And next was a book with a telephone dial on the outside. He got lots of adorable things, especially clothes, and with each one, as she opened it, his mother said those dear, very personal things that mark Lucy as a child of grace. While I, alas, kept on acting the villain by attacking him every 10 minutes or so with a wet wash rag to get the chocolate off those grubby little hands and the sticky sucker off of his face out of deference to the lovely yellow sofas and the apricot chairs. Lucy had a tape that she kept on passing around to the crowd to say a word to Pat, in between times describing herself to him, the scene around us. And it was all so sweet and cozy. But there was another very sad note in the house all day long. Texas days, Amon Carter, M.D. Bryant, Houston presides over his empire with considerable will and activity, and withal a graceful acceptance of the years. He travels, he fishes, he has written some, a pleasant life. I'm glad we have shared a part of it. And I am particularly glad that here in the White House, between us, Lyndon and me, we have managed to write a proscript to these many long-time friendships with a pleasant interlude here in this wonderful place. The most unique vignette of the day was after Patrick Lynn's birthday party when all the guests had left, Father Kiefer held a special mass in the Queen's sitting room for Patrick Lynn. Only Lucy and Lynn and Warby Lynn and I present. He covered the center table with a white cloth and put up a little portable altar and went through the service with those two pretty girls kneeling on the floor and Patrick Lynn toddling around and all of our hearts several thousand miles away with Patrick. Quite possibly another first within the walls of this old house.